When he was just a kid on the clammy coast of Florida, Joseph Scowron III received a preppy nickname, Chip. His parents liked to say he was a chip off the old block, but they all knew it wasn't true. His father was a franchisee for Long John Silver's, and Chip loved him, but he didn't intend to join the fast food business. Chip's grandparents had arrived from Poland in the early 20th century and settled near the cotton mills of Fall River, Massachusetts, below the elbow of the Commonwealth that juts into the Atlantic. Chip's father, Joe Scowron, grew up in an unhappy house. His parents were consumed by alcohol and depression. Even after Joe had children of his own, he kept his emotions obscure. When Chip pressed his father for stories, Joe would say, "You can ask about it when I die." Joe Scowron finished high school in the mid-1950s, which was fortunate timing. Massachusetts was expanding its state colleges, and he escaped a fraying industrial town to study engineering at Southeastern Massachusetts Technical Institute. Afterward, he was hired by Boeing and sent to a stretch of marshland on Florida's Atlantic coast that was being developed for NASA into Cape Canaveral. He met another recent arrival, Janet Nutter, born to a Scots-Irish clan in Swandale, West Virginia, a company town run by the Elk River Coal and Lumber Company. Janet had married young and divorced young, and set out to reinvent herself in Florida. She found work as a schoolteacher in the heady stretch of the coast that people called the Space Towns. Janet and Joe married in 1966 and settled in a neighborhood where kids at the bus stop could watch rockets climb into the lapis sky. Joe worked as a supervisor on Cold War rocket projects, but by the mid-1970s, he was chafing at the hierarchy, and his promotions had slowed. He left the space program for the restaurant business. Also, it was becoming clear how much he and his wife were opposites. He was curt and aloof. She was warm and intense. She traveled and read philosophy, and in her late 40s, embarked on a doctorate in psychology. The couple sometimes fought bitterly in front of their children, but among outsiders, they were adept at avoiding any signs of distress. If the doorbell rang in the middle of one of their battles, Chip's parents would paint on smiles and usher in the guests. Chip took it as a lesson. That's what we do. We show this to the world, but it's not the whole truth. Janet doted on Chip. She told him he was unusually bright, and she invoked John F. Kennedy's belief, adapted from Luke 12:48, "To whom much is given, much is required." School was easy for him, and his attention wandered. At 12, he started smoking pot. At 15, he snorted cocaine. At 16, before tennis practice, he smoked crack. But his grades never slipped, and his parents let him roam. "As long as you're getting straight A's, you can do what you want," his father told him. Chip graduated second in his class. He settled on an idea for the future. He wanted to be a doctor. In the social hierarchy of 1980s suburban Florida, doctors were local royalty. They had education, wealth, and respect. "I wanted to be that. I wanted to be important. I wanted to be helpful," he said. He enrolled at Vanderbilt University in Nashville, joined a fraternity, and studied math and chemistry. He planned to combine the work of a physician and a scientist, and he applied to a prestigious program at Yale for a joint MD-PhD. For 6 students a year, it provided a full scholarship. In late 1990, he learned that he had been accepted. He called his parents in Florida and left a message on the answering machine. His father called back, but he sounded shaken. "Mom has been killed in a car accident," he said. She had been on her way to dinner that evening when she was broadsided by a pickup truck. She died at the hospital. Her family brought Janet's remains back to West Virginia and buried her on the family farm.
Thank you for listening to this clip provided to you by Macmillan Audio. To hear more, look for this title wherever audiobooks are sold.